Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Yes, indeed, powered by the SID Media. Elder Lloyd is on the line. Good afternoon, my elder.
It's a privilege and a pleasure being back on SID.
Yeah, are you good though?
Yeah, sure, I am. Thanks so much, and I hope yourself too.
No, good. Cannot complain at all. Cannot complain at all. Yes. Well, we continue with our conversations from yesterday, and want to know, man. The psalmist in Psalms 6 verse 5 says, "In death there is no remembrance of you, O God. In the grave, who will give you thanks?" Now, with this in mind, why not talk about the mental state of a dead person? Do give us a summary of today's lesson and how much a dead person really knows.
All right. Thank you so much. This is a very important subject to take a discussion on, because there is so much mysticism and ignorance that goes around the subject of death. And God, in his mercy, has made sure that we have some knowledge as to our state in death. So, regarding knowledge, it is interesting to note that as we die, obviously we start decomposing and disintegrating, and definitely the human brain cannot understand better when it's disintegrated than it did in its best condition. If you didn't understand arithmetic while you were living, there is no way you would understand it when dead. Okay. Because physically the brain is disintegrated. Yesterday I alluded to the English adverb of being no more. When we say the elder is no more upon death, it means that I cannot be any more than I had been when I was living. So the Bible, in many verses, alludes to the same, that there is no knowledge in our death. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 5 and 6 says that the dead do not know anything. And verse 6 indicates that even their love, their hatred, their envy, their aspirations, anything that is done under the sun is long gone. Because death is a sleep and a dreamless one, whereby, according to the Bible, we are totally oblivious and unconscious of the goings on amongst the living. So this is what the Bible says. It is quite interesting that when you read the Bible, we do have so many people who were, all of had the same story to tell about their state in death, and their story was nothing. They didn't have anything to say. With many examples, there's when Elisha when Elisha died, he was thrown into, I'll call it, a grave, whereby they laid a dead man for some time, but as soon as his body touched the bones of that man, that man got up and maybe ran away. When you talk of the son of the widow of Zarephath, the son to the widow of Nain, all these people, they did not have a story to tell about their condition in death. And Jesus' own friend Lazarus, when you read in the book of John chapter 12, the Bible says, he was sitting alongside Jesus at the table, and the Bible account does not have any news that he broke about his experience in death, which I think should have incensed and maddened those who would always say it otherwise. Lazarus did not have any update for them regarding his state in death. So in the Bible, we do have scores of people who were resurrected, and we do not even have any one of them relating what could have happened whereby he or she was dead. To talk of Dorcas, the list goes on. They broke no news when they were resurrected. Logically, heaven would be very miserable if the righteous dead were in a state of consciousness. You see, you can imagine if you live right and you are conscious in death, but you see all these and maybe your family getting into so many challenges, and you would not be able to assist. Then heaven, if that held true, then heaven would have been a place of torture. You see, and people have been dying for the longest time. You can imagine we do have people dying as far back as maybe 3,000 years before Christ. If those people are still conscious, seeing all this progression of evil to date, you know, it must be torturesome. So the Bible is clear, and even when we follow the logic of it, it makes sense to believe that the dead do not know anything. But again, I would also want to indicate, as I did yesterday, that so many people believe in consciousness in death for different reasons. Of course, some do have their sinister plots. The devil would want to bring in some issues on some heretical teachings, and he makes for there to be apparitions whereby people, I mean, seemingly dead people bring unbiblical teachings. But at the same time, there are some people who actually think that they do get some solace in knowing that the dead are watching over them and things like that. But I would want to pose it that
Are you saying that those who are saying they are dead are watching over them, they are dead, are visiting them in dreams, they are dead, are giving them advice? Are you saying that they are confused?
No. Maybe confused is not the word, but they are in error. They are in error. Yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, for some, I do not doubt that some would want to borrow some comfort from having that kind of belief, but it is wrong altogether, because even when you read the Bible, God detested those who sought to communicate with the dead. You know, God had always had issues with people who believed that the dead would communicate with them.
So are you saying
it is
that
looking for comfort in all the wrong places?
So are you saying that a person whose father died some 15 years ago doesn't need any comfort anymore, but is telling you that, you know, every time I need to make a decision in my life, I get a visit from my father who then tells me which way to go, and it has worked over years? Are you saying that this person is seeking comfort in the wrong places because they don't need comfort?
Definitely seeking comfort from the wrong place, in as much as they might be getting some visitations of some sort. You know, the devil is able to do that, but what the Bible is clear on is that those visitations are nowhere near our dead. Those are not our dead visiting.
So who is it then? Because if a person says, it was my father who was speaking to me, I saw them in a dream, are you then saying, no, it's not their father?
Yeah, if we make the Bible our rule of faith and practice, then it won't be our father, because the Bible says so.
Then who would it be? Who did the person see then in the dream? And the person who was advised...
The need for a different discussion altogether on the ministration of angels, as we know that the devil has some angels he works with. Mm. You know, maybe I could take you back to the book of Genesis, mm-hmm. whereby the first couple were chased from Eden. Before there was anyone who had died, the Bible records that God commissioned an angel to guard the entrance. Mm. So we do have beings which we call angels, which are not dead people. And the devil has a third of all the angels God has ever created. And this is part of their job description.
So are we then saying that These are demons?
Yes. An emphatic yes.
But then how... What kind of evidence, my elder, would you rely on in saying these are demons? But the person has seen their mother, their late grandmother, talking through them and giving them an advice that seemed to have worked. And then we come to them and say, it's the demons. What evidence are we relying on there?
I do not have any evidence except that the Bible makes them so. Which I think is greater than any evidence I could have. The Bible makes them so, and so I believe.
So we don't have evidence?
I just need to clarify. My evidence is that the Bible makes such appearances as demonic, which is all the evidence I would need. Of course, some would need some other evidence I do not have, but just because God said so, I go by it.
I see. Yeah. Now, why do Christians find comfort in the belief that their deceased loved ones are essentially asleep, they've fallen asleep? What's comforting with that?
Because it is a state of restfulness. You know, it really is a state of restfulness. This world is full of ill, and it really gives comfort that death is asleep, as the Bible makes it to be. Being unconscious of at times even bad things that happen to your loved ones and things like that, I think it can only make death some kind of cherish the sleep.
Now, before,
and also, and also maybe just to add, and also as the Apostle Paul indicates that there is no sin in death. You know, he who is dead sins not. So when we are dead, we are beyond temptation, which is some bonus, if I would put it like that.
Now, how would that then inform the way we grieve?
We should grieve as those who do have hope, because as also I indicated yesterday, that death is not the end. You know, death is not the end at all. In fact, when Christ shall come, it will take us into eternity, as it were. So I would say that, that's it. That beyond death for the righteous living, when Christ shall come, he shall usher them into eternal bliss. And even there is also some issue which is contended by many Christians, that even those who would not be saved, they will not be in torment forever, you know, eternally destroyed, which really shows how gracious God is.
Yeah, fantastic one. Well, my elder, I must thank you so much for coming. But before I let you go, how would you conclude then this lesson?
There is a favorite quotation. I've forgotten who the author was, but I think it really helps us. It goes like, if an honestly mistaken man stumbles upon the truth, he either ceases to be mistaken or stops being honest. Yeah. So if we are honestly mistaken on the state of men in death, immediately as we stumble upon the truth, as we have been stumbling upon the truth yesterday and today, it's either we cease being mistaken or we stop being honest altogether. So let us choose to be honest.
Indeed. Thank you so much, my elder, for your time. Truly, truly appreciate you coming through for the last 2 days. Blessings upon you until we speak again.
Keep well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.